Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive is our continuing arts coverage with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller continues here. Want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors who make this happen. They're still around. We're about to do a really incredible story about downtown Baltimore and theater here. And certainly Fadley's is still downtown. You can stop by, grab a crab cake. Wherever you are, call ahead, curbside, and even better, if you're somewhere in the suburbs, you can have it delivered, or you can send crab cakes to a loved one far away. I've had friends do that. Nothing makes folks happier than finding Fadley's crab cakes somewhere where you can't get one this time of year. Also, our friends at State Fair with the chicken and waffles and the shrimp and grits and the delicious wings and all the burgers. They'll even build you a box of food, and you can pick up your salad, your vegetables, your protein, take it home. You can cook it at home. Evan's over at State Fair, always getting it together, and if we were together, Don Moeller, we would be, we'd probably be having some chicken and waffles right now. I know you can't wait to see your son, Jeff Moeller, and Moeller and Gary Realty, of course, one of our sponsors as well. But they're still closing deals, right, Don?
They're closing deals. They're showing houses. They're listing houses. They're having settlements with their good friends up at Crown Title and David Thurston. As I said, David's put some picnic tables out in the parking lot, so settlements continue. So give Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors a call, 410-746-1547. We want to thank Fronda Cohen, number one patron of the arts, who we've brought out of retirement to really serve as the executive producer for what we've called Arts Week 1, which was such a success that we've had to branch out into Arts Week 2, Arts Week the sequel. And Nestor, we have a very special guest on today, and why don't you bring our guest on, and we'll continue with Arts Week, too.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Arena Players, I mean, you know, we started with the Hippodrome, and I mysteriously even mentioned the Mechanic earlier this week, Don. And you know, I think for you, being a guy that goes up to Broadway so often, and recently, you know, I saw Wicked over at the Hippodrome, and I had to give my wife a whole background that I actually was in My Fair Lady and Pippin and stuff, despite the fact that my sports career low these many years. The Arena Player has been around forever, and, you know, I've always heard about it, read about it, haven't been, but David Mitchell is here to tell us all things Arena Players, and certainly been around the city a long time and trying to make great things happen. The managing director here of Arena Players, and you know, you got quite a story to tell when you talk about history in this city and the arts, right?
I like to think I do. I am a transplant, like a lot of folks in Baltimore, but I've been here about 16 years, and that whole time I've been heavily involved with the theater community. So, yeah.
Well, from your background through Coppin and Goucher, you've been all over Morgan, the whole. Yeah, for you,
where'd you get all that information? Wait a minute.
well, I have LinkedIn.
Okay.
When you say picking Baltimore, and you know, some people, Baltimore picked me. I was born over Church Home in '68. You know, Don's been here forever. Lost his dog in the '58 Colts celebration. You know, so you know, but for people that pick here, you know, I had a great conversation with a new friend of mine who owns Verde Pizzeria over in Canton. Came from Chicago. Yeah. Said, you know, came here 12 years ago and wanted to make a life in Baltimore. And I think that's something that we're always fascinated by when people come here and join us and never leave, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've always seen Baltimore as fertile ground for big ideas. And a lot of my colleagues feel the same way. It's just a lot of opportunity here if you have the get up and go spirit and the chutzpah. I've stuck around, and I call it home now. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, David, Arena Players is such a special part of the arts community in Baltimore. When people begin to dig in and research it, that you all began in 1953 and have gone continuously, have never gone dark, have continued an operation. Talk a little bit about the rich history of Arena Players, what it is, talk about community theater, really let us kick back and be educated here.
I'll do my best. Like you said, the organization established in 1953 as a place where African Americans could go to hone their craft and basically have a place when there wasn't any other place for them to experience the arts or practice the arts. Of course, times have changed, and over the years, people have come and gone, but we've been in service to the Baltimore community for generations. We have generations of people that have come through our doors, and it's always interesting to be elsewhere, that is outside of Baltimore, outside of Maryland, and run into people that have actually participated in programs at Arena Players. Should also be mentioned that we are a community theater, and so unlike the professional theaters in town, you know, we serve the community in quite a different way. Yes, people come to enjoy theater, but we're also, we have a youth theater program that, you know, supports youth in all their dreams of being on stage, but it really is a stepping stone towards what they eventually end up doing in life, which, you know, we have folks that are doctors and lawyers and teachers, you know, civil servants. I mean, like, it runs the gamut. We're always going to be in that place of service. You know, there's something at Arena Players for everyone.
Tell us, David, if you can, build on that concept, because that is a little different than the Everyman's and the Center Stages and the Hippodromes that we've talked about. Talk to our listeners about why you believe so passionately about community theater and its place in the arts community.
Well, I mean, you have folks that come from all different walks of life with all different types of experiences, and theater means something different to each one of those folks. And so our job as theater administrators, as an institution, is to meet people where they're at. Sometimes, you know, the practice of theater is something that is, just wholly therapeutic for some folks. They don't have aspirations of being on the big screen or on somebody's Broadway stage. But, you know, at that particular junction in life, they need theater to serve a certain role in their life. And we have folks that have come and done a show and we've never seen them again. And then we have people that have been at our organization for 30 and 40 years coming back every year to do that one or two or three plays and be a part of the fabric and be a part of the history kind of thing. So I think that's the magical nature of our theater, is that, you know, we are in service and we meet people where they're at in their lives, and they remember us for that, and they celebrate us for that.
You know, as a kid who acted in Pippins and My Fair Ladies and Olivers when I was a kid, I'm now 52 years old and extending my, you know, walk through the world. How does someone walk into an Arena Players or find their way to you? What does community theater mean in 2020, that if my wife used to be in shows and she wants to get active, how does one do that? Is it, well, you're having a showing of The Wiz and I try out and I maybe make it or don't make it? How does one get involved with Arena Players?
So we do our best to get the word out. We, for a very long time, were perceived or looked at as very insular, just because we've always had difficulty in getting the message about, getting the message out about what opportunities, you know, lie within. These days, the best way we're able to reach people is through our social media channels, primarily Facebook, and also through our website. And we have a pretty lengthy mailing list, if you can imagine, that spans decades. And so we do really hardcore, you know, mailing through the post. That still happens.
Well, hey, I just voted the other day that way, so don't knock it until Trump shuts it down, you know. So,
David, walk us through the, because Nestor loves to go behind the scenes in this sort of theater world. Walk us through the process of how you all decide what productions you're going to produce in a given season.
So what we do at the beginning, well before the beginning of the season, is assemble an artistic committee. This committee is made up of directors who we like to work in the coming season. It's made up of folks that work are entrenched in the community, actors who have been with us for a long time, and a few of our staff persons. And so over a series of meetings, we decide what the theme and the kind of plays that we want to showcase for that year, and then if we can figure out any auxiliary programming that might be complementary in the way of talkbacks or art exhibits, then we kind of layer that in as well.
Well, I see you guys are doing really the whiz here and trying to hold this thing together. Nobody can get in a room. People need to learn parts. You're hoping to put this thing back on. And I even see up here, it's $30 to come down, certainly very, very affordable. And if you didn't like Wicked, and Don and I are famously anti-Wicked fans, I like the whiz better.
Only a couple of us in America. Most everybody else loves Wicked. So there has to be something wrong with us.
Oh, my goodness.
What's your favorite show, Dave?
Oh, wow. I'm a big August Wilson fan, to be honest. I've always found that I found August Wilson's work to be very compelling and meaty and well-rounded characters. And so when I can direct, I just jump in and I'll pick an August Wilson play to do.
You're a drama person then, not so much The Wiz, huh?
Yeah, well, not so much The Wiz. I'm not a musical person.
I told one of your other theater compatriots, and I'm sure you saw it, given what you just said, that I thought the production of Radio Golf at Everyman Theater was just spellbinding. August, just spellbinding.
Yeah, it is. I mean, wherever you might see August Wilson, it's going to be compelling.
Yeah, I mean, the characters are so rich, and that, you know, that series of plays that he produced. Now, what people might not know, you yourself are an actor, right? So you actually like to get up on
stage. Oh, man, you did your homework. That's what I actually went to school for, is acting. But I ended up being a director and producing and really liking the idea of creating space for other people to do what they do in the realm of theater. So,
what's the favorite role you played, David, in your career, whether it was as a young guy or a maturing actor? If you could go back and play one role again, what is that role?
I liked Othello. I had a really good time with Othello. Once I was able to get my head around the language and the time period, I really found that fulfilling. If you'd ask me, that's the role I'll put up there.
Well, pretty good play right there. You were working with a guy who had a little bit of success along the way.
Just a little bit.
David, in addition to your work with arena players, and we say to folks up front, right, it's not arena stage. Don't get them confused. Both fine institutions, but arena players,
exactly.
the oldest African-American theater group in the United States of America.
Yes.
But in addition to that, you've really been an advocate for increasing representation of minorities and African Americans in arts and cultural institutions in the region. Maybe you talk a little bit about that work and why you have a passion for that as well.
Oh, wow. As across the board, I just think that a stronger representation of people of color in our arts institutions is needed. It's for far too long, it's just been the opposite. And so this is all experiential. As I move from one organization to the next, one theater to the next, I've always been at a loss to identify people of color that, within the institution I can relate to and or rely on or get advice from. And so it just, along the way, I started thinking about programs and or ways to infuse talents from people of color. I'll always be in that mindset. I think that we tell a better story. That is the theaters, from my theater to the next theater, when we have all kinds of voices at the table, all kinds of ethnicities, people from all kinds of communities at the table. We tell a better story.
Is it a challenge, David? Is it a challenge to get both sides, and this is what I'm interested in this work that you're doing. Seems to me there's two sides. There's the artistic community itself, and then there are the members of minority communities that you're trying to convince that they need to play a larger role. Do you get pushback from both sides?
I sure do. I sure do. You know, I mean, every community wants to celebrate their own autonomy, you know what I mean, and being able to produce and celebrate their culture on their own terms. To have to find yourself in somebody else's culture is a bit daunting, or to wait for them to want to celebrate you is a bit daunting. And so, yes, there's definitely major pushback when it comes to bringing both groups to the table or finding collaborative projects for people to work on. Striking a balance is also very challenging of when it comes to expectations and responsibilities of these different groups. Just because, you know, at the end of the day, it's how all the money trickles down, and majority of the time, if I'm to be completely candid, majority of money goes to predominantly white institutions, and that's a hard pill to swallow, especially when you get down to the nuts and bolts of creating programming, and you have a predominantly African-American team with its hands around the programming, but, you know, the dollars are going to, let's say, the predominantly white institution. I think I'm getting in the weeds of this conversation.
Not really.
That's what we do.
What Nestor and I always is remarkable about the discussions we have is how connected so many of them are. Months ago, we had a detailed discussion with Speaker of the House, Adrienne Jones, and the importance of her support for historically black colleges and universities. We had that same discussion with Dr. Sarah Williams, the superintendent of Baltimore County Public Schools, and here you are again talking about the need to support these cultural institutions in the African-American community and people of color. So it's not in the weeds at all. It really is all connected for us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. That's good to hear.
Well, I mean, let's start with this. I mean, I have my Coppin banner back here, and I was literally on the phone with Ruffin Bell earlier. We're having all the educators, and Freeman Hrabowski's coming on next week. We're having four or five other presidents in the area. But when you're talking about Coppin, you're talking about Morgan and what COVID is going to do to them, let alone to arena players or to the Hippodrome or to any of the arts community here. You were a professor here, and, you know, obviously, you know, students leaving campus, maybe not coming back. We're talking. Don and I have done a whole educational series for young people trying to learn in this environment. This has been quite an upheaval all the way around for the educational institutions everywhere, but let alone for places like Coppin and Morgan that, you know, we're always struggling to bring people into our city from outside the city. We'd like to see those universities be stronger. It's hard to be strong in this environment right now.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is, and so much up in the air, you know. And you have to also account for the loss of momentum, you know, and motivation, especially in the academic setting. It's hard to restart and regroup. I commend all of the institutions, the academic institutions, especially the ones that I've worked at, for pivoting and figuring out, you know, as we go, how to sustain and how to revamp themselves so that they can be in service again.
Enjoying our conversation with David Mitchell. He's the managing director of the Arena Players. Been around town a long time with the cultural affairs project coordinator at the Baltimore Office of Promotion and Arts and all sorts of professor stuff and work with stuff. So you talk about picking this thing up for where you are on a daily basis with where COVID is, where your life is, and where Arena Players. What will tell you it's time to sort of put this thing back together? And clearly, it's like baseball. You know, you don't just show up and the whiz happens. I mean, there would have to be all sorts of things that would have to happen to get this show back onto the stage. Where's your mind in, okay, we're safer. At what point do you start putting the pieces back together? Because it takes a lot of people to put these shows on. We know that.
It does. It does. And, you know, we have to follow the lead. First, we follow the lead of our our city government and our mayor. We also are very in tune with what the governor's been saying, and so we're listening intently about how what their ideas are about reopening and or just making things accessible again. We know that it's probably going to come sooner than expected, just because, you know, the economy can't stand being closed down for another month or two. And so internally, we're looking at things and we're like, all right, how is this applicable to us? How are we going to manage, even though they say your doors can be open, how are we going to manage social distancing? There still has to be some level of social distancing and safety procedure in place. We're having those healthy conversations now. We're looking at how we can expand our programming possibly outside of our actual physical plant, so that, you know, we can have everybody that comes to enjoy our programming feel safe and you know, taken care of, kind of thing. And I know I sound a little nebulous because we are in the midst of these conversations, so there's nothing concrete that I can actually offer you as far as remedies and our solutions and programming. But, you know, everything is under consideration right now, and we're hoping that we are able to start or offer the Baltimore community something during the summer. We're not quite sure what that is yet.
So, Dave, my wife and I, we come up, let's say you get this thing together, and sometime this summer we can all go out and do the things we'd like to do. And we walk up, I don't know, Mount Vernon Marketplace, get some oysters and whatnot, a little Mexican on the way up. We come to your place. Yeah. What are we going to find if we come there on a summer night? Don will come down, Linda, and we'll all come up together and see the Whiz. What are we going to see when we walk up to Arena Players?
Yeah, so you won't see the Wiz this summer.
Okay.
It'll be a part of our next season. What you'll likely find is, if we're lucky enough, is our youth program in full swing. Depending on what time of summer you might run into a show, we're going to also explore the exterior of our, but we have three empty lots that surround our building. And so we're going to explore what it might look like to bring performances outside. So you might walk up on an outside performance. Maybe it's Othello. I don't know. We'll see.
It'll either be Shakespeare or August Wilson if it's you, I think, right?
There you go.
Hey, we appreciate your visit. Don, are we done with questioning for David?
Yeah, I just have one real quick one, Dave, because I think it helps folks. Do you all look for, we always ask, do you look for contributors? Do you look for patrons? How tough is it I'm just blown away. You guys have been there since 53. How tough is it to keep this thing financially solvent?
Oh, it's so hard. it's very hard. Our saving grace is that we own our building. And so that is something that not everybody has. We're frugal whenever necessary. So funding hasn't come to us easily over the years. But we're very used to pulling up our bootstraps and finding a way through. It's why we've been around for 66 years, going on 67, and you know it's just I can't lie. It's a major challenge, especially as a culturally specific institution. And like we were talking about earlier, it's that constant conversation about relevance and why folks need to invest. And some people get it. I mean, like I've had in the past year healthy conversations with our foundation community here in Baltimore. I'm just hoping that we move from conversation to action.
Really appreciate your time and a great conversation with you about the arts and about Baltimore and your love of Baltimore. And we hope to get together soon and see a show with you and get together for everybody here in the arts community that are shut down right now. Want to give you a little bit of oxygen to tell your story and because we're all important in this thing and putting the thing back together. David, thanks again.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. David Mitchell joining us here. He's the managing director for Arena Players, Don Moeller's inspiration to put arts and entertainment. We're mixing everything here. We got universities next week. We've got mayoral candidates 2 weeks from now. We have been discussing all sorts of facets of this COVID with state's attorney and our attorney general and Brian Frosch and Scott Schellenberger. So you can check all of that out at Baltimore Positive as well as at WNST.net because we ain't got no sports to talk about other than the Ravens draft, which we will get to as well. I am Nestor Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive. We are together at Baltimore Positive with 200 episodes now of Baltimore Positive with us. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. Keeping calm, staying local, down on McCullough, and Baltimore Positive.